Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Mini PC Show. This is episode 58, and we are joined with a full house today. Guys, how are you doing?
Everything's good.
Everything's good. This is Rich. Rich, I haven't been on in a long time. That's feels like we got the band back together again.
Yeah. I'm broadcasting from the Hughes Compound Southern Command and loving it.
Awesome.
Yeah, I don't even know what day it is, because basically I've been to work one day this week and I'm not going to work again tomorrow. I made the mistake of looking at how much time I had accrued, and it was over 600 hours. So once in a while, I just got to, use leave.
So is that 10 and a half weeks?
I'm a government employee. I don't count. I just saw it was that much and figured I better start using some.
Oh, 400 hours would be 10 weeks.
That's crazy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's...
Well, that's what happens when you've been there for 20 years and you don't take leave and you really try to do your work to the extreme. There comes times where you look at your leave and you're like, I have too much leave.
Dorm, I'm going to make you feel guilty, because you realize if you've accrued that time when you're making less per hour than you are now, you're cheating them.
Okay. Sure. Okay.
I guess it didn't work.
You're not? No, because I'm a government employee. I don't get raises. So I basically be getting the same pay now for, whatever years. So, yeah. So thanks for rubbing that in, Rich. We have today me, Rich, and Brian, but we also have, I'll say this, a guy who's been involved in conversations about mini PCs for, I don't even know.
Since day one, since it was just an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
Yeah, we have Daniel. Okay, really quick, Daniel. We did this when we first started this. So I'm going to ask you, whereabouts are you from, or where are you at now? And what do you, if you had to define a mini computer, what would you call it?
Well, I'm currently located in South Florida, and the definition of mini computer, I guess it's something that carries over the functionality of a larger computer, but doesn't need all the... Okay, you know what?
I think you got something.
I mean, maybe I do, but I think you guys just challenged what I had,
I never really wasn't trying to do that.
Thought of it that way.
Well, I'll say the main reason I asked it was because when we were first talking about doing this show, I kept thinking to myself, there is no definition. This is like saying to somebody, what is patriotism? I can ask 50 people, I'll get 50 different answers.
Right.
Same kind of thing with these mini computers. It's all in the eye of the beholder. What I will also ask you is, do you have any mini computers now? If so, which ones are your favorites?
Well, I have a Chip and I have a Pi 2. Had the original Raspberry Pi when it came out a couple of years ago. That kind of got lost somewhere along the road. I have a couple of Chinese HDMI stick board things that I kind of mess around with. So far, I think my favorite has been probably the Pi 2. I don't know. I just had a lot of fun with it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I will say my Pi experience, the thing I like about Raspberry Pis, you buy it and you know exactly what to expect. It's stable. You install the OSs. You know what is going to work. Billions of people, it seems like, are writing and buying about these products kind of thing. So the girth of information is near never ending, it seems like. But I'm always looking forward to the next rev. The next version of the Raspberry Pi, I think, is going to be really great, hopefully really challenging, make everyone else step their game up and push a little bit harder.
One thing that I'm kind of miffed or surprised didn't happen yet is I understand that between all of the Pi devices, you could take the microSD out of one and plug it in the other, whether it's a Pi 0, whether it's the original Pi, whether it's a Pi 3. But the Pi 3 is 64-bit, and I'm kind of surprised there's not a 64-bit OS, official Raspbian 64-bit yet.
I can't argue, and I swore, I remember them saying very shortly after the launch of the 3, after they touted for months, it's, 64-bit, that they said, it will be coming. And I don't even know how long it's been now, but I'm going to say it's been at least 8 months. And yeah, there's no sign of them still coming out with one. I understand the breakages that can happen when jumping from 32 to a 64-bit operating system, but it's the kind of thing, I don't think the pain's ever going to get easier. You just got to bite the bullet and decide when you're going to do it and do it.
Correct.
Very cool. Okay. Did you guys see any links in the spreadsheet that you wanted to talk about? While I talk out loud, I'm also going to search my inbox for the phrase mini PC.
Well, I got a bunch of backup stuff to talk about, so I can fill you in on what I've been up to.
Okay.
Go now.
Sure.
Okie doke. All right. So for those of you who haven't heard yet because it's kind of been all over the internet, I'm a fan of Crash Plan, and I do have a Banana Pi Pro running Crash Plan. It's a little bit of a hack to get it running on an ARM device. Crash Plan is essentially Java code. One of the interesting things about Java code is you can actually decompile it and get all of the variable and function names, all everything. It's pretty nice. It's not like decompiling, you know, C code, because you're not going to get that. Well, I'm saying all of this to say, wow, I love Crash Plan. I'm doing all sorts of stuff. I like Crash Plan because it's multi-platform. So we've got one of everything in my house. So Windows, Mac, Linux, it backs them all up. I can back it up to a Pi device. I back up to the cloud. Well, I have the unlimited family plan, so also my in-laws are backing up their computer to the cloud. They're canceling that plan, and they're going to give you 2 months for free, and you got to figure out how to switch over. So I'm, you know, feeling all sorts of sorry for myself, trying to figure out how to get around this. And I was actually looking at the code. I was looking at the configuration files. I reached out to some guys that claimed to be Java programmers on Fiverr to see if I could get anybody to bite. Maybe they'd be interested. What I did do last week is I fired up Duplicati, which is a reasonable facsimile to the UI on Crash Plan. It'll allow you to select the backup from the particular device you backed up to and the version of the file that you want to restore. So that's kind of nice. Duplicati is client-based. It's not server-based. And the back-end is whatever you want to point it at. So the back-end could be Amazon S3, Amazon Glacier, something that works like it. I was backing up to my hosting provider. I'm a hosting reseller, which means I have unlimited bandwidth and unlimited storage, but not for archival purposes. So about 10 hours after I started backing up to their server, they chopped it off. You know, they're like, hey, dude, you're gaming the system and we know it. So I am not going to have cloud backup to my hosting provider. That's not going to happen. I did set up, I had a 5 terabyte drive kicking around that I was using for, you know, kind of a safety backup on something that I liberated. It's a USB 3.0 drive I got at Costco. So if you ever want cheap storage, troll them. They have good stuff cheap. So I wiped that drive and I threw Duplicati on. I'm sorry, I didn't throw Duplicati on because Duplicati is client only. It's back end independent. So the back end, as far as the Pi goes, is SFTP. So you just set up, when you say the target that you want to back up to, you just specify username, IP address, and path. And, you know, if you say SFTP in the protocol, I was backing up using WebDAV to my hosting provider. And you can use almost any stinking cloud that you have available, the big list of what to back up to. My only quip about it is it does one backup a day, and there's no flexibility on that. It would have been nice if I could have added, you know, noon and midnight or every 15 minutes or something like that. It is open source, so if you're diligent enough, you could jump in and change it. The product seems reasonably mature. You know, there's a couple of wants, and I haven't gone through the GitHub repository to see how they wrote the code and if there's a wish list or anything out there. But if I had to be stuck with it, I would be happy. So I'm kind of pursuing this at 5 different angles. So Dor and I, we did a show, I don't know, two or three weeks ago, or two or three shows ago, I should say. And we went over what's in Diet Pie. Well, Diet Pie has a number of items for backup, and one of them was Sync Thing. And actually, let me just pull that up again. So it claims in backups, OwnCloud, NextCloud, PiDio, UR Backup, Gogs, which says it's a GitHub server, which I'm sure is not for file backup, Sync Thing, and Tonito. Tonito looks like what the Pogo Plug was. I mean, Pogo Plug probably branded Tonito.
Well, no, they both came out. Neither of them could get great traction.
Oh, yeah.
They're both basically the exact same.
Because I remember there was a Tonito plug, and I'm like, huh, this looks familiar.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the Tonito is open source, but there is a peer-to-peer version of it. But what I did try is Sync Thing. In Sync Thing, there's a little bit of a mothership. It is open source. It will allow you to do the peer-to-peer thing, and it's supposed to go through firewalls, etc., because it does phone home. There's no subscription. It's not quite polished. Now, and I think it's super early. They're not even at a Rev 1.0.
That's the thing. It's been around for well over a year. They came out when BitTorrent Sync, before BitTorrent Sync went to version 2.0. They said, we're going to come out, we're going to emulate all of the features of BitTorrent Sync, except we're going to be completely open. So they've been around close to 2 years, is what I'm going to say. They've never seemed to get the traction.
Oh, okay, because I was hoping they were around less, and that they were going to, like, accelerate.
Yeah, I don't think they're getting much traction. I don't think they're going to get much stuff behind them, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, it could be good, and it's more like Crash Plan in that you have a client-server app where your app is both the client and the server.
Well, I'll say this. First, there's two formulas for backup, server and client, or client-less and serverless. They're two main mechanisms. The advantage to doing the way Duplicati does it is each one is basically independent of each other. So you could have a computer completely crash and not affect any of the other backups and how everything else works. The con, you cannot backup something unless you can install something to it. So if you want to backup a folder on your Android device and there's no Android installer, you ain't going to do it. It ain't going to happen without some real trickery going on throughout the other side. The other side is you have to manage the endpoints independently. So if you want to back up 20 devices on a server-based system, you manage one interface with the 20 devices connecting to it. On this Duplicati way, you have to manage all 20 devices independently, one at a time. There's pluses to it. There's also more work if something go boom. If an upgrade breaks dependencies, it could be a little bit painful. I'll say to only allow you to back up once a day is incompetent. It is unbelievably, ridiculously incompetent for any tool to only allow one backup a day when there's no pricing structure that I can see. I mean, I don't want to say I can understand, but if they were to say, download, backup once a day for free, if you want to do it every hour, give us $20 a year or something.
Yeah.
But to not even allow it as being a possibility to me is shocking. It is downright shocking.
Okay, and you brought up you tickled my memory on one other thing, which I'll talk about after we're done with backup. The third thing, or fourth or fifth or seventh that I'm doing is I have a virtual lab here. I spun up two Ubuntu desktops, and I loaded CrashPlan. And the fun thing was I did it all on one. Before I signed into CrashPlan, I cloned the VM. And then I signed them both into, created new CrashPlan accounts for them, signed them up. And once they were signed up, I turned off their internet access. And then I set the clock to 2026, to 9 years in the future. So they're still working. So it looks like if you're on the same network, peer-to-peer should work into the future if you still want to use CrashPlan.
Well, I wouldn't have turned off the internet. I would have DNS black holed CrashPlan servers.
Right, and that's my future plan. If this does work for a desktop, I would black hole the DNS on, with an etc/host file, and also on my router, I would black hole it. so that none of the computers that would be running CrashPlan would be phoning home.
Well, I mean, that's good that CrashPlan will still work.
It works. It's working for the day. I'm trying to poke holes in what would, you know, validate this test. If it continues to work for another week or two, I'm going to call it a success. So,
gotcha.
I'm going to kind of go off topic here. Dor, you've always been saying, like, on Patreon or whatever, you should donate a dollar to whatever. You know, you give a good talk about it, and you're compelling, and I've heard it enough from other people. Even though I've been severely broke, I'm like, you know what? The entertainment value I get is at least worth $10. And I said, I'm picking 10 of the things I like, and I'm giving a buck to each of them. And I did that this, you know, past week. So I'm feeling altruistic for my whole $10 donation.
Yeah, I think everyone should stop once in a while and just think, who am I spending my time with, whether they know it or not, and maybe donating a couple bucks here and there. You don't even have to do it every month, my logic. You know, if there's a YouTube guy you like a lot, shoot him a couple bucks. If there's someone who does a podcast and they're on Patreon, you know, shoot them a buck a month. Even a buck a month can make all the difference. The one piece of hardware I wanted to bring up here was line 510 in the notes. Only because this is the example of the piece of hardware that I think we wanted months and months and months ago. And it's finally becoming a reality. It's called a Seed Studio, S-E-E-D, is releasing a Respeaker 4 mic array for $25, a quad microphone add-on board for the Raspberry Pi. Okay, everybody with a smartphone or a modern phone has had to experience being on the phone with somebody, them being in a noisier environment, but you can still understand them pretty clearly. Okay, that's because all modern phones, even flip phones back in the day, had two microphones on them, one facing the person's voice, one facing the opposite direction. And what would happen is, in firmware and software, they would do a noise cancellation. The noise coming in the back of the phone, they would also have it come in the front of the phone, and they would cancel it out, which would make the voice come through clearer. Well, with a four mic array, they can do that, but they can also get directional sound, because literally with four mics, then you can point one mic in each direction. The mic can hear from further away and hear clearer because of it, kind of thing. So for only $20 to get a four mic array, to me, opens up the possibility of actually now, because we've had for months, we've had for at least 6 months, the possibility of doing a Amazon Alexa type device using the Amazon developer console. And then we've had for a little while, at least 3 months, the Google Home, Google Now, Google Assistant ability in a Raspberry Pi. And then very recently, we've had the ability to turn them both simultaneously on a Raspberry Pi. This is what was missing. We need the multiple mic input. Now, especially if there's any kind of, dare I say, voodoo that they can do on the board to do like the noise cancellation and stuff, I think it'd be better for everybody involved, and I could see it being very hard to keep this thing in stock.
One thing I wanted to mention, MediaTek doesn't have the best track record for releasing any sort of sources or any sort of driver stuff, so I hope that doesn't work out to be a disadvantage. Says here that the board is based on a MediaTek processor, I think, here. I don't know if that's the... Is this the component I'm looking at? 510, right?
Yeah. I don't know if the MT7688 is a processor, to be honest. I didn't pick up on that.
Pretty sure it is. I mean, that's usually how their processor scheme is.
You're right.
I don't know. Maybe things have changed from back when, you know, I had some run-ins a couple years ago with some lower budget phones, but I don't know.
Right. Well, they're going to have two versions of four speaker, a four mic one for $24.50, and a $10 one that has two mics array. It says it's actually, okay, the audio, it looks like it's actually, maybe this is like one of those multi-processor things, because it says it's the AC108 quad channel ADC chip for microphone arrays. So then I think it's going to be what kind of software.
So ADC should be analog to digital converter.
Yeah. So the question is what's going to be what's going to be the API calls through it to it. You connect via the 40-pin header, which I think is a good sign. So hopefully the processor is really on the speaker board is really nothing more than a dumb device that just receives the API calls and sends the information back over the board. I don't know.
I mean, it looks like the processor is designed for Internet of Things. So I guess, you know, I mean, that'd be pretty bad if they left that kind of stuff out, right?
It could be.
Yeah, right.
It could be really bad. Really bad. For $25, I'll tell you right now, if I have the money, well, actually, I'm not going to lie, the $10 one, when it comes out and it's available, it looks like they're only taking pre-orders now. I got no problem spending $10 seeing how it works. Probably, yes.
So here's a cool line in here. I'm using an Orange Pi Zero board with a single microphone with Google Assistant. It works fine most of the times. Range is limited to about 5 meters. That's kind of cool. I thought you could do something like that with an Orange Pi Zero on the daughter board. I think it's like $2.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, this one.
Yeah, I'll say the Orange Pi is great. So cheap, so affordable. I got these little tiny micro USB mics that I still haven't had a good reason to try to put on a board and see if they would work at all. I'm pretty sure they're pretty crappy.
They are pretty crappy.
Because I want to say they were like $3 a pop.
I have one in my kitchen on the Android TV box, and I can stand about, I'd say about 2 or 3 meters away, and it'll pick me up.
Huh. Gotcha. Very cool. Any of these other notes, links in these notes jumping out to you guys?
Well, Dor, I thought you'd be all over 507 and 508, the DAC board.
507, DAC configured. I don't know. Am I? Should I?
Well, you were talking about that.
Yeah, I am, but I'm also terrified to click through and see how much this thing costs. This is a Wi-Fi.
You can roll your own.
Well, this is a Wi-Fi connected wall display for your photos, calendar, news, and weather. But the display is typically like $100+ right. When you roll your own.
Yeah, but you could grab an old monitor and do this with a Raspberry Pi.
99% of the time, it is so difficult to use an old monitor. You're going to end up spending $100 in a power, not inverter. Because the inverters are very hard to get.
Or cutting the holes in the wall to put the power behind it.
Yeah.
Well,
and then your wife tells you I want it 2 feet over.
It doesn't matter. I ain't cutting no holes in nothing. You must be on some narcotics. Ain't no holes in cutting the wall. She will kill me.
Gotta make it flush. Gotta make it nice.
Right.
And I really don't like the fact that create your own account. They want you to basically go through their interface, host everything, so they can control you. Because all this is simple text. That's what, you know, there's nothing special going on here.
That goes back to a frequent rant of mine is I want to have root on everything and
$300.
Oh yeah, but that's not why I posted it. It was because of the
$300.
DIY part.
$300. Cool.
Yeah, I want to have root on everything and pretty much have everything open source because the crash plan pulling the rug out from under me really ticked me off.
Well, okay, I'll say it. Going to Duplicati ain't any better.
Yeah, you don't
you
think
wanna... so? Hell no, it's even worse.
Why is it worse?
Because I don't see any way to pay them money, which means they ain't going to be around. Period. If you ain't going to pay them, who's going to pay them? They have bills to pay. I mean, food ain't free. Electricity ain't free. I mean, if you want to have root, then I say you just use SSH and rsync on all your devices. If you want root.
You know, you have a really good point. They have a nice looking website. Looks very professionally done.
And there's no way to give them money.
Huh.
No way that I can tell, at least.
Now, okay, so is this for your personal use or for your business? Oh, okay.
Okay, so they do have a DIY blog. It's through their blog. Things you would need. Monitor with HDMI input. Okay, right there. Right there is over $100. That's the big kicker. See, and they say roughly $200 depending on side. That's the thing. Screens are a ripoff. I can just emulate this via a web page and show it on a crappy $40 tablet. Well, I hate saying it like that.
Yeah.
Because it would suck. Yeah.
I mean, this is exactly the same thing as those magic mirror things that were, kind of popping up, just minus the mirror element.
Correct.
Right.
So, I don't know.
It looks cool.
It does. I'm sure it would look elegant. I mean, I'll put it this way. If I had a small business and I needed something by the front door that looked cool, I'd buy it. But, you know, I don't, and I don't have that money sitting around.
Oh, you could donate to Duplicati. PayPal, Bitcoin, or I don't know what the other one is.
I dare you to ask them, email them, and ask how much have they gotten donations in the last 30 days. And I'm sure they'll give the answer, oh, we're not allowed to share that information, which means nothing.
So how does rsync work for you, Dor?
Rsync, dirty secret, every single backup thing that's ever been created since 89 or 88 or whatever has been based off of rsync. Rsync is the great granddad of backup, because in rsync you can keep permissions, keep ownership, copy soft links, copy hard links. You can make it so if a file gets deleted on the host, it does get deleted on the backup, or the inverse. If it gets deleted on the client, it does not get deleted on the server. It's a simple command line syntaxable thing that every operating system has used since basically the beginning of time. The problem with it is it's ugly, in air quotes, but you can download tools like grsync and go through a GUI and click all the boxes and click the button that will give you the command. The trick is then you have to get it to run on a scheduled task, and you have to have some sort of SSH connector. Now, if you're on Windows, you can literally say, connect to this Windows via Samba or FTP or whatever, and run the same rsync command, because it will work over a network connection, and then just copy everything off. It's the only way I've ever known to really truly have total control over your backup routine. The unfortunate part is then you have to design it from the ground up, and you have to maintain it. You have to be aware of when devices go on and off. Are you going to connect via IP, host name? Do you need to worry about a host file? Do you need to worry about local DNS? And then when you do have it all backed up, where are you going to take the master backup and back it up to? Amazon EC2, Google, Dropbox,
man,
you know, so on and so forth.
Sounds like a part-time job.
Well, it is, but here's the gimmick. It's one of those things, once you get it hammered, once you get it figured out, you're done. You shouldn't have to do anything with it for years and years. But it's getting it set up just like Rich is now. To put Duplicati on all the devices ain't, you know, 2 seconds and it's done. You know, you got to go to every device. You got to install it. Same exact level of work, in my opinion. You got to configure it, install it, click what you want backed up, where you want it backed up to, go through that whole thing. Rsync is the ultra nerd command line way of doing it. And it's like everything. I'm trying to remember the old Windows syncing application. It was on Windows since literally, I want to say, 95. It was basically a GUI version of rsync. The exact same options that were listed in that application were directly taken from rsync. And there's been more than a couple Windows applications that when you actually look at the bin folder and you decompile it, you actually find rsync.exe. You know,
pretty good.
Running in the background. A real quick, okay, here you go, Daniel. You mentioned chip. Line 520 in the notes. I got a chip. I got two chips. I got a chip gaming little thing. I got multiple hats for the chip to do HDMI out and VGA out because I want to support them. I also got the pocket chip, the handheld, fully immersed touchscreen, like a 5-inch touchscreen computer with the chip in it and a, you know, keyboard and all the ins and outs and things. And I will say I have not taken the damn thing out of the box for 5 months at least, because the keyboard sucks so horribly, ridiculously bad. Yeah, it is horrible. And this, I saw this, and I literally couldn't believe it. I read just a little bit of it, and I bookmarked it, and it's the kind of thing I want to really sit down and dig into. I got a 3D printer. It says paper clips. I'm halfway there. But it looks like you really do need to buy Cherry MX switches. If I read this correctly, which of course I don't read well, but that's what I thought it said.
It says you might not be able to fit the classic Cherry MX Blue keyboard switches on the pocket chip, but you can definitely 3D print and install Anthony Girolamo. Oh boy, I'm butchering that, mechanical keyboard. So no, you are building the thing that pokes those little round buttons.
But it uses a spring mechanism like a mechanical switch would, right?
It looks like it's pivoting on, I don't know if that's a paperclip or, you know, music wire.
It does say paperclip, and that's the thing. You can't 3D print springs. Ugh. That's one of the things that concerns me, is what I'm going to say.
I 3D
Looking at the
springs.
Picture, you don't 3D print springs.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah dude.
Show me one. Oh, hold on. Right here. Show me one, because you don't 3D print springs. It's not a spring.
I'm right, that's a spring.
The hell ain't no spring. What the hell drug are you on?
I got other springs I printed.
A spring is like a slinky.
Show that again?
It's a battery holder.
Yeah, it's like a clip.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's a spring on the top.
Okay, sure. I want to try this. I want to play with this. It's on Thingiverse, which scares me because Thingiverse, like Rich knows, Thingiverse is like the Craigslist of 3D printing. You'll never know if you're dealing with a child predator or the most affluent 3D printer who's ever been born. You know, everybody goes there. They have all the thing files. They mention all you need is paper clips. If I read this correctly, I think I have no choice but to move forward and try to print this damn thing because I got the damn thing. I sit in there. I love the device. I just despise the keyboard so mm-hmm. much. So much.
I'm shocked that it did so much right and ended up with that keyboard.
I think it was, somebody just said, we have to be fiscally responsible about something, and they put their foot down, I'm going to guess, and that's where they decided to put their foot down. Because everything else about it's nice. I mean, at the top, you have all the GPIO outputs right there you can connect to. The actual screen is a touch screen that works really well. I'm surprised. The battery lasts for every bit. I think it was like 5 or 6 hours. I mean, everything about it was nice, except for the keyboard. I know people that say that they carry it around with them. Then what they do is they connect a Bluetooth keyboard to it, which I understand, but, you know, I'm tired of carrying it around.
Yeah. How do you hold that up with the Bluetooth keyboard at the same time?
Yeah.
Right. I'm tired of carrying stuff around, so I don't want to carry around another Bluetooth keyboard.
So when you guys were talking about donating or paying for Duplicati, I had noticed the Bitcoin donation button, and I had looked into it, and it says that their wallet received, since 2014, 0.7887204 Bitcoin, which
is $3,000 worth.
Yeah, $3,639 currently.
And today's value.
Right.
Yeah, today's value. But I thought that was pretty interesting. And the icon next to the Bitcoin is actually something called SIA, SIA.tech, and it is apparently a decentralized private cloud.
Oh.
So maybe that's worth checking out.
I think so. Absolutely.
Sorry, that
Very
was
cool.
a little off tangent again, but hey.
No,
that
man.
That was good info.
That's, yeah, that's a good eye. That's what that is.
Yeah, I completely
Better
missed
than my
that.
Eye. Huh. Oh, yeah, because I try to click it and it says the address wasn't understood. Danger.
Yeah, mine's not even working.
Well, because you don't have the thing installed. Gotcha. Okay. Brian, I see you put a whole lot of links in here.
Whole lot of links.
Yeah.
I was just link happy. So what I'm really actually pumped about is I'm an Azul fan. I've got a couple of Azul products, and they've just recently launched the Byte 3. Actually, I think it was the 28th, which is similar to the Byte. It's a mini PC, desktop mini PC, with a built-in Wi-Fi antenna, and it pretty much sits in the palm of your hand. The original Byte. Yeah. The Byte 3 is a little bit more rectangular in length, but what really got me going is that it comes equipped with a USB 3.1 port on it, which does about 10 gigs per second transfer speeds. I thought that was pretty cool for a mini PC this size. I'm trying to find the dimensions here.
Super small.
5.6 by 4 inch by 1.5 inch.
Crazy small. I like it.
Very compact and comes port heavy, including four USB 3.0, a standard VGA or HDMI, depending which one you want. Ethernet port, which I cannot see, but I also would not. I can't believe it would only be 10/100.
No, it's gigabit.
No, it's gigabit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what I'd say. It has to be gigabit. And I hate saying it like this. To have Wi-Fi and not have a antenna is, I don't want to say grossly incompetent, but it's enough to make my OCD turn into CDO because that's the correct letters in alphabetical order kind of thing. Have an antenna. Just make even if it does nothing, I don't care. Mm. That little turning of the antenna makes me feel better. It makes me believe I'm doing something to better the Wi-Fi connection.
So what's the price on this?
The base price is about $189. I think that comes with 4 gigs of RAM. The top price is they're asking about $307.
Ooh, that's a little high.
Yeah.
It is, but I will say also, I do believe the quad-core Intel Apollo Lake N3450 is one of the newer ones.
I think that's, I don't know if that's what I have at my upboard squared.
The squared, I'll say possible, because if you remember, the upboard people had to wait for that.
It might be the
N4200
or something like that.
Yeah, status launched Q3 16, so it's been out just under a year, is what I'm going to say. Recommended price for the processor itself on Intel.com, $107. So that's, just for the processor itself. So I don't mind paying $180 for the starting price. And here's the thing, I know you, Brian, you know me. Neither of us would get the low end.
Right.
You got to go up at least a little bit, dual band Wi-Fi 2.4 and 5. If you're close enough to that base station and it does 5 gigahertz, man, that speed you will get is really nice. I will say that. SD card size up to 256 gig, which means it is XFAT compatible. Mm-hmm. Not quite 2 terabyte compatible, but I think we'll be okay with 256. And it says it has an M2 slot. I'm guessing it's in the case you got to pull it off, but it says it has an M2 slot, so you can do the mini SSD inside of it. Wow. Yeah. You have to take the case off to get to it, but that's okay. Man, these are good-looking devices, Brian. You have how many of these? Like 2 of them, I believe?
Yeah, I've got the PC stick and the Bite for my son. He still loves it.
Very cool.
He has not grown it yet.
Dumb question. On the Bite, how big is the power brick compared to the device?
Not big at all.
Oh, okay, because I figured it would be almost the same size.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's good. Very good. Okay, let me copy this one, make sure. Okay, there was 2 of them. It looks like 517 and 518 in the notes.
Yeah, two different, same product.
Yeah, one's the announcement, one's the actual product page. Honestly, I'll say this, Brian. If I needed a solid mini computer with zero maintenance, zero upkeep, and just works, I would have no problem spending $250 or up.
I agree.
I really wouldn't.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Okay, so the upboard I have is the N4200, and yes, it did take me that long to figure it out.
I gotta hold my sarcasm back. I like you, Rich. come on.
I got the screen up. I could have went on Ubuntu and about this computer, and it tells me it right there, as opposed to going to Kickstarter, finding the link, logging in, what I back.
Right. Yeah, okay. Here's a link I'm going to bring. I am, via this link, obviously, I've been talking about this stuff for a long time. I am habitually hooked on the idea of running a emulator for me, family, friends. I'm dead serious. I'm the guy. I'm really tempted to get a bunch of Pine 64s because you can get a Pine 64, the low-end one, for around $15.
Wow.
I mean, that is a really good price, and it will run mostly every type of emulation you can do, up to Super Nintendo even, and make a 3D printed case for these things and just pack it full of ROMs and give it to every family member as a Christmas present kind of thing. All you would need is good game pads, which ain't hard to find. I saw this link, and I believe it's pronounced Batocera. B-A-T-O-C-E-R-A.
I'm a friend, so I won't make fun of you.
Batocera. I can't say. Everyone knows I can't talk. Batocera Linux is how I'm going to call it. And if I'm wrong, I don't care. It looks like another competitor to RetroPie, to Logca, to all those other ones. And here's the thing. I am a sucker for good buffalo wings, but I'm also a sucker for competition. And I want these guys to get more traction and more news. So both the RetroPie and both the Laka guys might get a little bit nervous and decide, you know, I'm not going to watch that movie with my girl. Instead, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to do a little bit more coding. Maybe I can make my stuff a little bit better kind of thing. I will also say the one thing I like about this is they have, just like Laka, specific builds. You can go to their download. You can download it for x86, 32-bit processor, 64-bit processor, most every desktop and laptop since the old Macs died off. Raspberry Pi and the Raspberry Pi Zero, the Raspberry Pi 2, Raspberry Pi 3, and then separately, Odroid XU4 and Odroid C2. I'm going to tell you right now, that Odroid XU4, there would probably be no reason I shouldn't be able to do even PlayStation 2 emulation, in my experience, with the performance I've seen on this device. So I am going to download the one for the Odroid XU4, run that thing, and see what kind of performance I can get out of it. For giggles, what I did, because I was off again today because I had too much leave, I loaded up a NES emulator on the Odroid C2 upstairs. I handed my son a overworld map of Legend of Zelda for the NES. I booted it up, and I told him, tell me where to go. He said, what do you mean? I said, look on the map. You'll see things like negative money, and then you'll see money, and then you'll see hearts. Tell me where to go to pick up the stuff, you know? And we just sat there for like over an hour, and he figured it out, and he was telling me where to go. It was fun, I'll just say that. Even though, you know, I beat the game literally like 100 times. 101 can't hurt, right? That's my logic.
So what do you find the emulators for these systems?
You mean the ROMs?
Yeah.
Number one, never search for them on a Windows computer. Number two, don't search for them on a Mac computer. Back in the day, I'm sure you guys remember, back in the day, anybody who got infected, the old line was, well, he must have been looking at porn. You know, that's not true anymore. You want to get infected, go look at downloading ROMs for systems. That's where you will get overly infected. On your Android device, I literally just type in Legend of Zelda NES ROM download, and like one of the first two or three links has it, and I download it. There are a couple. Well, if you really want to download like arcade ones, archive.org, the Wayback Machine, archive.org, you just go there and type MAME, Multiple Arcade Machine Emulator, MAME download. You'll see a 40 gig file you can download that will have literally every game from 1960 to 1990 in like one large download. But I just basically browse for them, download them, and then have a little pocket of files that I've had on my one computer now for 10 years that every time I find more games to download, I just download them, put them there as my backup. So I have plenty. And if you would like some, Brian, all you got to do is send me a picture of the game that's saying that you own it, like me. Like I have that wall over there with all the games that I own that I'm not going to show you guys right now because it would be a lot of work to move the camera. You just send me that picture and I'll send you all the ROMs you want.
I own that movie.
What do you mean? Everything on my Plex server I have the box set for.
Well, I did. Yeah, I did. I sure did. I finally figured out how to do some more ripping on Handbrake, but we're not going to go there. So Batocera Linux is what I'm going to call it. If you guys are interested in emulation on these mini computers, go and check that one out. There will be all the links in the notes to everything that we are talking about here. This one I have high hopes for. Don't know how it's going to turn out, but I got high hopes for it.
That little speech has got me going. Got me all fired up now.
Well, and here's the bad thing. On the Makers podcast, we have Brett, who one of his dream goals is to custom design enclosures for mini computers to sell people with retro gaming games on them. The hard thing is how to do it legally.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's the, not so easy part, I'll say. Okay, Dave, you guys have any more links you wanted to bring up?
I stumbled upon something that I don't know if you guys seen or glossed over in any episode. It looks like a fork of Chromium OS called Flint OS. It looks like it's a Chinese team, but I think the goal is to optimize it for ARM. They have builds for, I know they have Raspberry Pi, but also the Tinkerboard from Asus. So, I don't know. It's kind of interesting, I guess. Haven't actually played with it, but...
Okay, well, I'll say, I will call them out and say they're lying. It cannot be built on Chromium OS. Okay, sorry. It cannot be built on Chrome OS. If you notice, they don't say they're built on Chrome OS. They're built on Chromium OS. Chromium yeah. OS is not a Google thing. It's not the same as Chrome OS. So
yeah,
I'll say this. There's one of the main reasons I like Chrome OS is because I know it's not infectable in the sense of you reboot it and it cleans itself. That's the only that's one of the big things you're missing out on when you go to Chromium OS. But I will say this. For kiosk-type computing, this is the kind of thing I've been looking for. I've had more than a couple places say kiosk-type OSs, and they really didn't do the trick. So I'm going to definitely have to look this one over, try it out.
Oh, is that the link?
'Cause, yeah, I put it in our Hangout here.
It's flintos.io.
Thank you, thank you. My eyes are so bad I can't see it. And you said they have custom builds for, like, Raspberry Pi?
Yeah, I think it should be a universal for the Pi. But, I mean, the thing that, you know, I found was pretty interesting is it looks like it's officially supported by ASUS for the Tinkerboard, which I haven't seen a whole lot of stuff for.
Yeah, and you're not.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised it's still for sale, but that's just me.
Well, it's funny. FlintOS 1.0 for the PC, 1.0 for the Tinkerboard, 0.3 for the Raspberry Pi.
Huh. You would think the Pi would be one of their more active ones.
Right, right. Hmm. Oh, okay. Hmm. And it says the other two are, I don't know if it's release 659, it's release 56 for the Raspberry Pi.
That's why different release versions. Well, either way, I'm going to do a Google alert on this page right here so I can keep seeing when this page gets updated because I'm going to want to play with this.
Could this be the 64-bit Pi 3? No, it isn't.
No, I do believe there are people who have released 64-bit OSs for the Raspberry Pi. None of them are official. Very cool, Daniel. I'll keep this in my notes, and I will make sure it gets in the notes for the show.
I was browsing the Chinese page a little earlier. Maybe they have released newer versions there. I don't know, but...
Well, the one thing I would hope is on first boot and on reboot, it would all automatically try to connect to a server, see if there's an update available, because I don't...
I mean, that functionality should be baked in a Chromium OS, so...
Right. Yeah, because I don't want to have to re-blast it every time I get an update upgrade. Okay. I think we had a pretty full show, unless there's any other things you guys want to bring up.
Unless you want a solid gold mini PC.
Okay, that one I'm interested in. I didn't click on the link. I read the title.
Yeah, so it looks like this Swiss computing company called Prime Computer is selling an 18-karat gold mini PC to at least 10 customers.
To 10 lucky customers.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the website's Fudzilla. Which I'll just say, could this be like an onion thing, Brian? I don't know.
I don't know, right?
My goodness. I mean, it looks good.
It looks like a gold case on a Nook.
It does.
Because those look like Nook ports.
It does look like Nook ports, but it doesn't look like the correct form factor. It looks a little bit not as deep.
You're right about that. But maybe it's a little wider, and that's why. I think it just the aspect ratio... It looks like it's a little wider. It looks like it's the proper depth because the Nooks are square.
Okay, ready? Apparently, the original idea was to release a gold-plated machine, but the manufacturing process was too tricky, so it opted for a solid gold PC instead. Each PC contains $500,000 of solid gold to make, but the CEO claims the company is still able to make healthy margins on each sale.
I love it.
Wow.
See, I don't know if these stories are true. There's this story. I worked at the Mayo Clinic for 2 years, and I know this story's true. Somebody came in for whatever procedure from Saudi Arabia. He flew his private 747 in, and all of his wives came, and he gave them each $1 million, and they closed the Sears in Rochester, Minnesota, because there was like 24 women with $1 million each. And, you know, basically they had private shoppers, and then they, you know, threw everything in the cargo bay of the 747, took it back. So I know that story's true. I've heard a story about, you know, some Saudi prince flying a golf pro over for a lesson in the game, and he said, oh, this has been very nice. I really appreciate it. You know, what can I do for you? Because I'm very happy, you know, you came and played golf with me and gave me instruction. The guy says, you know, just buy me a golf club. And he bought him a club like Mar-a-Lago, like a golf club.
Nice.
So, I mean, there's gold-plated Lambos. Why not a gold-plated Nook? But at least make it the Skull Canyon i7.
Right.
Right, right.
Because I'm looking at the specs on this, I'm like, yeah, nah.
A Core i5? That's not too bad, no?
i7, man. If it's gold-plated, not gold-plated, I mean, if it's solid gold case, I want an i7.
Right.
And how good of a heat conductor is gold? Is it real good?
I don't know.
It's a good question. What do you think, Dan?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm thinking of the movie I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, and all I keep thinking is, how do you go to the bathroom with all that gold on? So I don't know. I'm not sure. They've good link to end on. Brian, if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do so?
Yeah, you can hit me up on Google+. I'm definitely in the community there. Or you can send an email to podnuts.com.
Very cool, very cool. Rich, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the easiest way?
LionRich.com. It's the world's greatest website, and you'll grow hair and be smarter if you go there.
Unless, of course, your goal is to lose hair, then.
The hair on my back is growing, so.
Okay. Daniel, if people would like to get in touch with you, what's the easiest way?
Don't.
No. What I'm going to do is I'm going to add him to the mini PC email. So if you send an email to minipcshow@podnuts.com, it will find its way to him sooner or later.
Sounds good.
I want to thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for their support. Do not forget, support those who support you. I'm not saying give me money. I'm saying support those who support you. If you watch somebody perform tricks, give them money. If you watch people do speed runs on games, give them a little money. If you watch people make new ways of projecting spears into halves of trees and they sound Russian, send them some money. If you like a podcast, send them a couple bucks. Whatever. Support those who support you. We will talk to everyone again in about a week.
Hi, this is Matt, the host of the MRP Tech Podcast. Each week, I discuss my adventures in technology in a family-friendly show. I'd like to invite you to take a listen to it, and you can listen to all the episodes over at podnuts.com and subscribe to the RSS feeds to download them directly to your mobile devices. I hope you're enjoying all the great content here on the network, and as always, thanks for listening.